What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Martian and Ozzy podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about one of the biggest UFC cards in the history of the promotion, UFC 300, going down this weekend from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. 13-fight card, a few title fights, stacked card from top to bottom. I mean, the first fight of the card is a fight between two former champions. That just goes to show you what quality of card we're dealing with here. So can't wait to break down these fights. And Ozzy is back this week. How are we doing this week, my man?
What's going on? Doing really well. Finished Q1. We're on to, like you said, the biggest pay-per-view in UFC history. Probably the best fight card just ever put together in combat sports. So that's definitely like something to acknowledge. And yeah, you know, top to bottom, like you said, a lot of anticipated fights, a bunch of, you know, fights that people have kind of been hoping for, right? Like there's, I feel like a lot of these fights have been kind of in the, like, you know, bubbling up for a while. Yeah, for a while. And it is a good payoff, I feel, overall. So I think it'll meet expectations. A lot of these guys and girls on this card are known to get after it, right, to go for finishes. And I'm really interested to see how, you know, a lot of their styles clash.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to these. A lot of some of my favorite fighters, good matchups top to bottom. And can't forget, though, UFC 200, you know, back in 2016, the card fell apart the week of the fight. You know, everything fell apart. Brock Lesnar fought, but Jones and Cormier.
Oh, Anderson Silva filled in.
And then I think something else happened to it as well, but that slipped my mind. So
the Brock Lesnar ended up being like a late ad against Mark Hunt.
I think we're sticking together with the card. Remember a few years ago when like the fights would just get canceled like every week? That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people that missed weight last week, and you know, Charles Oliveira did miss weight for a title fight one time, so I wouldn't put it past anybody here. But speaking of that fight, there's been some that line has tightened up, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Ozzy's back this week. We're probably going to be going to a more irregular schedule in the future here. Ozzy will drop in some episodes. But, you know, with these fight nights, for sure, we'll be solo going here forward. So you're all stuck with me for just then. And then we'll try to have Ozzy drop in on some special cards here and there. And last week for me, though, pretty bad week of predictions. You know, overall, not good. And I feel what's even more frustrating is I feel I had some good reads on the fight, but just bet them poorly, which is frustrating. And pay-per-view cards, you know, historically harder and harder to beat from a money line perspective. You know, the dogs don't typically bark on these the past, you know, few months, maybe even years. So tread lightly with some of these fights. But with that being said, we're going to get in to these fights because we got a lot of great matchups. I'm sure we're going to go a little long on this one, but we're starting things off in the bantamweight division. Former champions Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt taking on one another here, with Figueiredo as the -305 favorite, Garbrandt coming back +255. So huge fan of Figueiredo. I don't really like many fighters in the sport, like I like an actual fan of the fighters. I'm a Figueiredo fan and will be till the end. And this guy's got a lot of haters, but Cody Garbrandt is also really unlikable. So I'm trying to put that beside me a little bit here and try to analyze the fight from an unbiased perspective. And that does lead me to believe that this line is wide here. I mean, Figueiredo being -300 seems a little ridiculous, especially when you look at his ITD line, favored at -120. I think that's off. And I mean, when these guys are striking with one another, sure, Figueiredo could be the more powerful and durable of the two. But if they're just, you know, striking, going strike for strike, and no one's knocking each other out, I mean, this could be really, really close. Garbrandt's jab and his boxing could be a problem for Figueiredo. And I got to think that Figueiredo hitting some takedowns here is his easiest path. We saw Garbrandt get taken down in round 3 versus Trevin Jones. He totally accepted going full guard there. He did already have the fight won. It was 2-0, you know, but I do think that the takedowns could be a factor for Figueiredo, especially because we just saw him go to that several times versus Rob Font. So, I mean, Figueiredo being the favorite with the grappling and the durability upside, maybe, you know, closer to 2-1 for Figueiredo, you know, so I guess Garbrandt is value. I haven't locked in a bet on him, but I probably reluctantly will have to because, you know, over 75% for Figueiredo is a bit ridiculous here. I'm interested to see if you're thinking along the same lines.
Yeah, cool fight here. You know, Garbrandt has gotten back. He's fought one, I guess, two in a row, or is it three in a row, I guess? Two in a row, right? Two. Yeah, so the Brian Kelleher fight, Kelleher just kind of fragile, even more so than Cody. A little bit of pretty much opposite of Figueroa. My issue here is I do think that the jab of Cody and his range striking and his speed and reflexes, potentially he could get like a beat on Figueroa and like have success and all. But I feel that he is just liable for Figueroa to hit him with a laser, you know, right hand or punch, you know, on the counter for a lot of the fight. And with the leg kicks as well, Cody's never really been too much of a kicker. We saw in that TJ Dillashaw fight, that's pretty much why he lost the fight, because his kick defense and just the mixing of the striking style messing him up. So, you know, I'm interested in the fight for sure. I do think that maybe Cody could be value, but I just do think that he is very susceptible to be deaded in this fight. But, you know, I do feel that there is equity in the Cody Garbrandt side, because maybe he has like a career, like a peaking, like a resurgent performance. Not that it's a title run, but maybe like a one last kind of thing that he's able to put together. He hasn't been fighting that often or in kind of like that grueling of things. This is what he's been building towards, this fight. I could see it, but I would pick Figueroa to win.
To counter one of your points a little bit, though, I mean, him Fig possibly getting the KO is definitely baked into the line. I mean, they have KO at 41% here for Figueroa. That has to be too high, man. So, I don't know. I think based on that alone, you got to take Garbrandt, even though it's a little bit of a tough play to make. Hurts me to bet against my man Figueiredo, but at least if he loses, then we'll have that winning wager. So moving on to a legendary fight in the lightweight division, Jim Miller fighting on UFC 100, 200, and now 300, taking on Bobby Green. A couple of bona fide legends here, more so on the Jim Miller side. Was pretty surprised to see Bobby Green's has a 12-10 UFC record. And Bobby Green's minus 183, Jim Miller plus 158. So your turn to start this one off. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, this fight I think was rumored for like 2 years back. They put it back together here. I thought Jim Miller would get something a little bit different. And I thought Bobby Green would take some time off. But, you know, that last fight, he took ton of unnecessary shots. I think that he's been slowing down. We saw Jared Gordon catch him with a lot of the strikes that he was throwing at him. We saw Drew Dober catch up to him in the second round and knock him out. And, you know, I think that he was able to take advantage of the faults in Tony Ferguson's game and take advantage of him. But Jim Miller has been looking a lot better in his recent fights. I think that he's shown and been able to blend both his skills, right, both his striking and his grappling in a lot of the fights, and it's been going well for him. So I think that Bobby Green might overlook him a little bit as well, just because of the fact that he fought Jalen Turner in his last fight. Now maybe he thinks that Jim Miller might be a little bit of an easier fight, but Jim Miller's motor has looked pretty good. He's been mixing in his kicks well as well, and Bobby Green did have like Thiago Moises like take him down and be draped all over him and stuff like that. And Jim Miller is an American wrestler and has great Brazilian jiu-jitsu to mix in as well. So he is very talented in terms of mixing it up. And if he is coming in, you know, good shape, I think he is super live to win the fight.
One thing I would disagree with, you said Jim Miller's motor has been looking good. It did his last fight, but that was the first fight he's won over 1.5 rounds in 6.5 years and 17 fights. And he also has lost 7 decisions in a row. Would have been on his way to winning a decision in the last one against Benitez, but his past 7 decisions, lost all of them. So, I mean, some of his fights, he really, really slowed down too. The Vince Pichel, the Holtzman fight, I mean, he was dead in those fights. So that is concerning, you know, because the longer this fight goes, that's got to favor Bobby Green. And I just think the hand speed here of Green will definitely win him the striking exchanges when they're on the feet. Miller does have the potential to land a big shot and possibly have a big moment on the feet here, but you got to think that the striking should favor the hand speed and the boxing of Bobby Green. And I believe that Miller is going to have to wrestle pretty hard here to get the win. And wrestling does tend to kind of take a lot out of his gas tank, especially when the takedowns don't come easy. He was able to just double leg and topple over Benitez, and he was able to do that and preserve his energy. But I don't think that he's taken down Bobby Green that same way. Green, he always has fights where he gets, you know, pushed against the cage and he's defending and he's tough to take down. The Moises, the Guida, the Trinaldo fight, they were all like that. He's a grueling guy to grapple. So I don't know, man. I think it is going to be tough for Miller to get the win. A line I do think it has value for Miller is his no scorecards at even money, minus 110 on some books. And then also Bobby Green in round three at 14-1. With the cardio dynamic I just mentioned, if it's a high pace fight and Miller slows like he has in some of his other fights, you know, I think 14-1 on Green to find a finish in the third and final round is a good look there. So I definitely hope Jim Miller gets the win. You know, him winning on 100, 200, 300 would be really special, but I think it's unlikely, and the line is probably accurate where it's at here. And we're moving on to the women's strawweight division, Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez. In this one, we have minus 137 for Andrade, plus 117 for Rodriguez. The steam this week coming in on Jessica Andrade. And I bet her early in the week, you know, around a pick'em number. Because I think at that price, I do lean with Andrade. Because I believe she has more ways to win the fight. I do think she could win the fight on the feet or on the ground, while Rodriguez is pretty limited to just on the feet. But Andrade also doesn't approach fights in a very efficient way. She's not going to come out here just, you know, attempting takedowns left and right. She might go for one if it's given to her, like Rodriguez does do in a lot of her fights. But Andrade certainly isn't going to like game plan to take her down here. But I do still think that she could get those takedowns. And on the feet, you know, it's going to be straight shots versus looping shots. The big looping hooks of Andrade versus the straight punches of Rodriguez, the clinch attacks. And man, it's anyone's guess who could get the better of them. I lean Rodriguez winning the exchanges, but man, she's pretty old, man. She's 36. She hasn't looked too great in some of her fights lately. She did just light up Michelle Waterson to an easy win. Looked good there, but Andrade also coming off a good win too. A good bounce back over Mackenzie Dern. This is a really close fight, man. I think a pick'em line is probably accurate. I'm feeling less and less enthusiastic about my Andrade bet the more I go in. But yeah, I'll stick with riding with her with a pick here. But where the line's at now, I don't see any betting value on Andrade.
Yeah, this is a intriguing fight. These two Brazilians, you know, when I'm thinking about the fight, I feel that Andrade obviously has a power advantage, potentially probably wrestling advantage. But in terms of her grappling game, when she does get on top, hasn't really looked great, in my opinion. You know, Marina's an absolute fish off her back, but she is, like, throwing elbows and kind of doing stuff like that. And she's been controlled by very good grapplers, you know, like kind of the Verna fight. That's a little bit different, I feel. But I don't know if Jessica necessarily goes for takedowns. In the clinch, I think Marina has the advantage. Jessica, a lot of times in the big cage, if a girl is a good kickboxer and a good outside fighter, right? We saw Jan knock her out. I mean, she just moves a little bit like bad, coming in and out and stuff like that. And she can be flipped and be predictable and run into strikes. And then also the leg kicks as well. What's her name? Lemos chopped up her leg pretty good right off the beginning. And, you know, she kind of chased her down. But I feel Marina does have a lot of paths here. But I also like potentially the fight just goes the distance. Minus 140, 2.5 over minus 160, 165. But I would probably lean Marina. I was originally leaning towards Jessica, but I think I'll go with Marina here on the money line as well.
I like that you brought up the fight with Lemos. Interesting comparison between the two of them. You know, Andrade was able to make fairly easy work of her, while Marina had a really close fight and eventually got knocked out. The way she got knocked out in that fight was embarrassing, in my opinion. So she's turning 37 later this month for Marina. And Andrade, she's not really taking these fights too seriously, in my opinion. So it's a tough fight. Either woman could win. I might buy my way out of my Andrade, but we're moving on to the lightweight division. Jalen Turner, Renato Moicano. Odds for this one have Turner as the -226 favorite, Moicano +191. This is the last fight added to the card. It's a good one. Give us your thoughts.
Why would they add this one at the last? What was that? I'm joking. But yeah, so this fight here, I was thinking about this fight earlier, and I was saying to myself, well, I don't really think that Moicano is going to submit Jalen Turner. And then I was also thinking, and I really don't actually like Moicano to win a 15-minute decision, especially after watching the Dober fight. So I'm like, well, that should tell me that I like Turner, moneyline. So I haven't got there yet. I think I might actually at the end of it. But I do think that Moicano is going to eat some big, big strikes. I think that he's open for the counter at times. You know, I backed him against Fiziev when he was, I think, like plus like 120, maybe 115, maybe more. I'm not sure. But you see there how he kind of gets hit on the counter and KO'd, you know, and he kind of doesn't see certain strikes coming, I feel. And Turner is pretty good with throwing, you know, both, you know, like in combination. So, you know, you do have to have solid defense, I think, to stop him. And then he neutralized Gamrot for a bit, especially on the ground. And then even when they were in the clinch and Gamrot was digging in for takedowns. So I really don't think Moicano is going to be able to compete with him on the feet. And I really don't favor him to get a lot of ground success either. I like Turner.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. And one thing I saw on tape for this one, it was just the type of takedowns Moicano gets. If you watch the Turner fight versus Gamrot, you see Gamrot shooting on the legs. He's shooting double legs, single legs, and that's how he's able to get Turner down. But Moicano's takedowns are very body lock centric. He loves getting to the clinch, getting his hands clasped, and going for some sort of trip, or some sort of upper body lock takedown. And I just think that that's the clear dynamic of this fight, where Jalen Turner, he's so long. He's got a very unique frame for 155. He's very dangerous. His strikes are nasty, straight punches, kicks, knees up the middle. I mean, this guy can really, really hurt you with his strikes coming in. And Mateus was able to shoot from like a far distance away and be able to avoid getting close to Turner because he was shooting on the legs. Moicano doesn't have that same ability. And I think that anytime Moicano comes in close, it's going to be Turner countering him with strikes and, you know, hitting him with that front kick up the middle. It's just going to be hard for Moicano to get inside on Turner. And I think there's a really good chance that Turner hurts and knocks Moicano out in the first round here. Moicano's reactions to getting hit at 155 are just flat out bad. I mean, Dober was hurting him with most of the strikes he landed. You know, Fiziev knocked him out cold. Even Alexander Hernandez was hitting him with some good strikes.
And Dober took himself down as well.
Oh, you know? Yeah. The fucking failed lat drop in the third Lord. Round.
That was so triggering.
That whole fight just absolutely pissed me off watching it this week. So, yeah, I mean, I think Turner honestly is going to knock him out. And the one bet I have on the fight so far kind of contradicts that, but it is Moicano sub 2-3. My boy JT shouted this one out. I could see Turner slowing in the later rounds, and that's when Moicano gets those takedowns and gets, on top position. But even Moicano's top game versus Dober, I thought, didn't look good, man. I mean, he had this guy down early in the first round, and I think he might have mounted him for one moment at some point. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to be getting super, you know, easy passes and dominant positions on Turner here. So small bet on that 2-3 line, but I truthfully believe that it's Turner KO round one, maybe early round two here. But I'm going with Turner here. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see where the money line goes under 70%. I do think it's value where it's at. I'm pretty confident in Turner in this one, but I haven't locked in any betting angles on him. Just a one on Moicano, evidently enough. So we're moving on to the featherweight division next. Sadiq Youssef taking on Diego Lopes. Odds for this one have Lopes as the minus 135 favorite. Sadiq at the plus 115 dog. I think Lopes is going to find a way to win here, man. This guy is very hard to cap. He's a guy who I haven't predicted his fights too well so far. And I bet against him in his past two fights, and I'm done. I've learned my lesson. And I am now on the Lopes train. I think 135 is good enough for a bet for me. And, you know, I just think that he's a very opportunistic fighter. He wins on big moments. He finds a way to convert big moments into finishes. And I just don't think Youssef is safe anywhere in this fight. I mean, I think Youssef is the more, you know, technical striker out of the two, but he's also not very durable, and he gets hurt with some shots, and Lopes is unconventional and he's janky. And I don't think that, you know, on paper he should be able to outstrike Youssef, but I just see him creating a moment where he either lands a strike or finds an opportunistic takedown, or maybe even Youssef gets on top and finds himself getting submitted, because Youssef has a good top game. We've seen that in flashes in his UFC career, but if he ends up on top here, man, we've seen it time and time again that Lopes is legitimately dangerous off his back with arm bars, guillotines, triangles, and I think that Youssef is not going to be safe anywhere here. So Youssef, I think, is going to need to win a 15-minute striking decision where he really stays on his P's and Q's, but man, he's not a really well put together 15-minute fighter, and I just think he's going to find some way to lose this fight here. So I got Lopes in a good one here. Fun matchup. Good step up for Lopes.
I loved this fight. I didn't see this one coming. I didn't think Youssef would get this kind of fight. I thought they would put him on ice after his, not immigration, but after his last loss in that main event. But yeah, I like Lopes a lot as well. And the reason is, when you're looking at a lot of Sadiq's fights, like, or even if you just look at his last one, okay, he fights Edson, hurts him early, whatever. Dude, after that first round, okay, you didn't finish him, all right? Maybe you give away some rounds, whatever. Dude, he fought the whole rest of the fight on the back foot. Did not pursue Edson at all. Did not look to have any power. And Edson was kind of content. He was like, all right, I'll kickbox this guy. I'm not able to really hurt him, but Edson really didn't sell out for the finish. And at 145, his power hasn't been big, like that big, like his one-punch power, but he kind of just wore him out through a lot of body strikes. And Sadiq, like, he just, like, weird strike selection. I felt that the tactics that he used, like, against Caceres, I don't really think are going to work here. And I don't think that he's good at receiving damage or keeping a fight, like, at his pace. So he let it get away from him against Arnold Allen, and he didn't really claw back rounds. Like I thought that he would, but while I was watching it live, Diego Lopes also has a ton more fight experience than Sadiq. And then Sadiq, quick turnaround after taking probably the most damage that he's ever taken in his career. So I like Diego Lopes here, but I think the money line, I think there's value in his money line, honestly. I think that it's just a bad style matchup here for Sadiq overall.
We are sending it there. And just think about this fight from a WWE perspective, Ozzy, if you will. Diego Lopes, young, entertaining guy. People love his hairstyle. Sadiq Youssef, he's got no fans. You know, it makes no sense for Sadiq to win on UFC 300. The prelims, this is the first fight on the ESPN prelims, I think, right?
One other thing, too, just in terms of, like, the ground games as well. You know, Sadiq, yeah, he trains Lloyd Irvin and stuff like that. But even if you look at that Edson fight, again, it shows you a lot. Edson's on bottom in the first round. I don't know if you rewatched it, Martian, but, you know, Edson starts working some stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of, like, works his guard game a little bit. Like, he goes for an arm bar, you know, there in a position where Sadiq has, like, a can opener grip or something like that. And I'm like, well, Lopes would have might have probably submitted him there. And he, in half guard, he's got, like, an underhook, and he's coming up on a single leg. And Sadiq didn't really look like a guy. He didn't give the reactions of a high-level ground guy to me. But who am I, you know?
Good late addition there. Speaking of arm bars, the debut of Kayla Harrison is coming up next in the women's bantamweight division, taking on former champion Holly Holm. Odds for this one have Kayla as the 440 favorite. Holm coming back as the plus 340 dog. What are you thinking about the long-awaited Kayla Harrison? Guys, Ozzy's been asking me for years, God, when is the UFC going to bring Kayla to the – I can't wait for her to make her debut. And here it is. This Saturday, Kayla Harrison makes her long-awaited debut.
Kayla Harrison, love her. You know, we're cut from the same kind of cloth. Our special finishing move is the armbar. So I love when my armbar girlies get their shine.
This fight, I mean, obviously the biggest talking point going in is the weight. Is she going to make it? She looks in shape. She looks pretty slim. She looks super jacked. I don't have a big amount of thoughts about this fight other than the fact that Holly Holm has worked in more grappling as her career has gone on. But she's kind of like a neutralizer as well. But she puts herself into positions that are very strong for Kayla. But I like the fight to just finish. Like, under, doesn't go the distance. Kayla to finish is okay too, but I kind of like getting the Holly Holm potential equity in there as well from a big kick or surviving early and Kayla slowing down a little bit. But overall, I like the fight to finish. And I also like Kayla Harrison to pick up that finish. But that would be my best bet on the fight.
Interesting. I mean, you're taking ITD over Kayla ITD? Is that correct?
The fight to finish, yeah.
But you see, did you already bet it? Because it just got bet. It's minus 130 now.
I mean, I'm not concerned.
I don't know, man. I mean, Holly Holm is not finishing Kayla Harrison. I really don't think so. I mean, the weight cut is the biggest concern going into this fight, right?
I mean, that's a huge concern, right?
It is, but
when have women going down in weight ever been like it either goes good or it's not going to go good. That's what I'm saying.
It went good for Jessica Andrade initially years back. She went from 35 to, and a few women did it successfully when 25 got announced. They transitioned down to 25. But, I mean, this is a big jump. But even if the weight cut is a factor, and let's say Harrison slows down, I just don't think Holm is going to, like, redline her and finish her. You know, I think if she slows down, it'll be Holm, you know, getting on top in rounds 2 and 3 or something. But I don't know, man. I think that Kayla will be adequately prepared for this one. But, I'm leaning the other way with the fight going the distance. But I've decided I'm not betting this fight. It's just not a fight you want to have your money on, man. I mean, this is a great fight to have no money on. And that is, I'm going to stay disciplined to this because I don't know. I won't spend too much time talking because I don't have any betting angle here. But when rewatching Kayla Harrison's fight against Aspen Ladd, I was underwhelmed where she got Aspen down and she was in her full guard and she really wasn't looking to pass. She was, you know, hanging on her back, you know, kneeing her in the thighs in the clinch against the cage, wasn't really looking to advance. It just didn't look like she was very aggressive with her passing and her grappling there. And now that she's cutting all this extra weight and she hasn't fought at this weight class, I feel like her style is going to be built around using as little energy as possible and, you know, preserving these positions and not doing too much because she doesn't really know if she can trust her cardio for the first time ever. So that's a big reason why I like this fight to go the distance. Even if Kayla is having her success, I don't think that she's going to be throwing a lot of strikes or being aggressive. Holm, 43-something years old, right? And the fact that she lost that last fight against Bueno Silva, embarrassing in retrospect. And she doesn't even outstrike women anymore. Her past, you know, several wins, Anderson, Pennington, Aldana, Santos, all those fights were her grappling and clinching and pushing women against the cage. She isn't even, like, composed enough to actually outstrike women anymore. So I have no faith in Holm, and I think Harrison is going to do her thing and grapple and clinch and ride her way to a 30-27 year. But no bets for me, and if I had a betting angle, it would be to play the fight to go the distance. Moving on, featherweight division. As good of a prelim as you're going to get in the UFC here. These next two fights are just incredible for being on the prelims. Former champion Aljamain Sterling moving up in weight, taking on Calvin Kattar here. Odds for this one have Sterling as the favorite, minus 170. Kattar coming back plus 145. So we're moving up in weight, but this should be a good thing for Aljamain Sterling. I mean, it's been widely accepted this guy is one of the biggest bantamweights on the roster, probably the biggest one. You know, one of the biggest weight cuts of any fighter. You know, this guy weighs, you know, 170, 175 out of camp, and he's cutting all the way down 40 pounds to make 35. I think that, you know, he's probably going to be possibly at an all-time best here with this weight cut. I mean, he's able to you know, not have to focus as much time in this training camp on the weight cut. He's not going to have to suck himself down as much to get to that weight number during fight week. And I think that that's going to show in his performance. And I do think he's going to outgrapple Calvin Kattar here. Don't think he's going to spend much time fooling around on the feet, but I don't think he's in that much danger if the fight does stay on the feet. I don't think that Calvin Kattar has the same, you know, knockout threat that a guy like Sean O'Malley does. And if it stays on the feet for long periods of time, yeah, Kattar will be bad for Sterling, but I don't think it's gonna. I think it'll be very transitional work on the feet for Sterling here, mixing his strikes in to get to that takedown. And I think he will eventually get that takedown, but it's hard to really be certain because Calvin Kattar has been in the UFC for over 5 years, and he has fought a remarkable lack of grapplers. Really, almost not a single dedicated wrestler grappler he's fought in his entire UFC run, which is just mind-boggling. You know, Moicano, you could say it was one of the more active grapplers. He didn't even need to take him down in that fight. He just kicked his calf. You know, Zabit took him down a little bit, but, you know, I just think it's tough to be certain or very confident in this fight because of that lack of grappling footage. But I do think Aljo gets his grappling game going, wins probably by decision. But his submission line is a pretty big number, 450, 500 on some books. I think that's a good prop on the fight and the only value bet that I see. Money line wise, though, I think it is Sterling or pass, even at this number. So I think the line is close to right, and I think Sterling will grapple his way to a W here. Calvin Kattar coming off a 18-month layoff in that ACL surgery too, worth noting. So your turn to go on this one.
So 145 fight here. Obviously Aljo moving up. He's kind of decided that after the last fight, and I love it for him. I think he's gonna do really well here at 145. I think this is a great start, you know, fight to start it off. And, you know, Kattar overall, I think that he's been diminished a little bit. I think, you know, the fights that he's had, right? He had the Max Holloway fight, right? But after that, he had that Josh Emmett fight. He had picked up that major injury in his last fight against Arnold Allen. And even in the Giga fight, he took some damage there as well. That was 5 rounds, too. But I just feel that, you know, you look at that Arnold Allen fight, he's swinging at air a lot. He's getting hit very cleanly by Arnold Allen. His reflexes look slow. Same thing in the Josh Emmett fight, another fight where he misses a lot of strikes. And I feel that Aljamain Sterling moving up from 135 is going to carry a lot of speed. He already moved well down there, you know, for that weight class. Going to be way, way more here. Can move in both stances as well. Has a lot of kicks in his arsenal. Two, and then this guy's coming off this ACL injury. Not going to be able to cut off the cage. I feel when Aljo gets his hands on him, I don't think his grappling has been improving. The guy is a promoter out there in Massachusetts. And yeah, he just, I just don't see how Aljo is not probably like has way more upside here. I like him by submission here. Like you said, I like the under as well. Basically, I feel that I want to fade the Calvin Kattar by decision method overall. But I just think that Aljo is going to do really well here, man. I think that the length is going to stay. He is a featherweight. Like, all his skills and attributes translate to featherweight. And it's not like Calvin Kattar even is like a front foot boxer, like is able to corner Aljo, pressure him, you know, be mixing it up, hitting him with body strikes. And like, he's a little predictable, and he kind of doesn't always dictate exchanges. He's kind of there, and he's throwing out a lot of volume and a lot of junk to be able to kind of get inside and land his better and cleaner strikes. But he doesn't throw a lot of power strikes, and I think that's going to lead to easy ways for Aljo to get his legs and get into clinches and grappling scenarios. Feel very good about Aljamain.
sounds good. Decision only -200 for Aljamain. I don't think you're interested in those lines typically, but
I think everything Aljamain honestly has every line.
Sounds you good. Pick we'll it, keep that Mike Hawk as we're passing it right back to you for Jiří versus Rakic, excuse me.
Holy fuck.
We're going down at 205 here with the line of -115 for Rakic, -105 for Jiří. 22-month layoff, another ACL surgery for Rakic here, back-to-back ACLs. What are you thinking on this fight?
This fight is so fucking dope. And I hate Alexander Rakic, and I always have. And I think he's proven himself that he's just always been overrated. Like, if you look at his body of work and compare it to the betting lines, like, he almost lost to Thiago Santos, and he was like -170, -180. He was able to beat Anthony Smith with like leg kicks and stuff like that. But in that fight, even he denied to do 5 rounds. He didn't want to do it, and he was just crotch sniffing there. He wasn't really advancing. It's not like he was actually wrestling him at to the ground a bunch as well. Like I said, he was like literally kicking him off his feet. And his entries to his leg kick suit is very simple. It's like a jab, low kick. His hands aren't very good. I don't feel his defense. I feel on the feet is quite poor. And I feel that the angles and the way that Jiří looks for exchanges and forces them is not anything that Rakic has seen before. So he better bring them wrestling shoes. I know people are saying, oh, he's going to wrestle this or that. Man, like, even look at the Jan fight, dude. He catches like a kick, I think, from Jan, whatever. He gets the leg, hikes it up. It's a good finish on the leg. But then even Jan, man, he's not able to really do a lot once he's on top of him. And what do we know, dude? That's not gonna win. It's not like Jiří is a fish, dude, on the ground. It's like, I actually feel Yuri's probably the better submission grab, low key, because Rakic literally has just never shown me good grappling. And Jiří, at least he transitions, he moves, he actually flows underground. Whereas Rakic it looks to me like he looks to stop movement. He doesn't want the action to happen and take place. So I really like Jiří in this situation. I don't think the leg kicks are as big of a deal as people say. Rakic himself gets leg kicked. He's shown he's not that durable to them either. He's been hurt in a lot of his fights. And Yuri's got a lot more experience than this guy as well. Like, I really don't understand why he's the underdog. I think Jiří should be clearly favored. But there's passionate people on both sides. But I would never bet Rakic as the favorite over I'm not sure how many people, but I really don't like this guy's overall game. And then the intangibles around it aren't good either.
Great word, keyword, intangibles. Those definitely favor Jiří here. And, you know, the action has definitely been coming in on Jiří. So I think the market is tending to agree with us. You know, I got him at +114 just a few days ago. It's looking like it could go to pick him, or maybe even favored for Jiří here. But there's two-way action. So it is a good matched fight. I do think it's winnable for Rakic, but I do also have to favor Jiří as the slight favorite here. I think that Rakic could win based around, you know, two main things is his leg kicks being one and, you know, his grappling attack being number two. We have seen Jiří be susceptible to being grappled throughout his career, but by a lot better grapplers than Rakic. And Rakic is kind of a weird grappler, man. I think this guy mostly prefers to be in the back clinch situation against the cage, you know, holding you from that body lock, kneeing you in the thighs, just kind of stalling against the cage. His past two wins are exactly like that. The Smith fight and the Santos fight, he is just, you know, taking him down, pushing him against the cage, not really achieving a whole lot of good positions there, but winning in the most boring fashion possible. And even his only success that he had in the Jan fight was when he took him down and Jan was in full guard and, you know, Rakic was able to win the round that way. But when Rakic is on the feet, he was getting boxed up by Jan. He was getting hit with some punches. He was those typical blitzing combinations from Jan Blachowicz, the jab body, you know, he goes jab body head and, you know, just 3-4 punches. he's been throwing those combinations his whole career, and those combos were hitting Rakic and snapping his head back, and the punches were landing. And that's, you know, 38, 39 year old Jan Blachowicz. Jiří's a lot quicker than that and more powerful. So I think the typical weird janky combinations of Jiří will likely work on Rakic here. And then both these guys are leg kickable, man. Their lead legs are both wide open. Jan was landing a lot of leg kicks on Rakic. Pereira was landing a lot of leg kicks on Jiří. And just the long layoff for Rakic, the injury, and just the fact that this guy doesn't really do much damage really, you know, make me stray away from him here. The Reyes fight, a close striking fight back in the day, he lost that one. I mean, he's not blowing anybody out of the water on the feet, except for, you know, Jimmy Manoa. But I just think that Rakic really needs the grappling to win this fight. And even if he gets that going, he's not going to be landing shit. He's not going to be getting good positions or submitting Jiří, no fucking way. So even if Rakic gets his ideal circumstances and clinches him and grapples him, Jiří could separate, land a few big punches, and boom, the round is back to Jiří. So I like Jiří here at plus money. Even at pick'em, I think he's worth a small bet, but I'm pretty confident in Jiří here. Great matchup. And we're moving on to the main card. Great, great main card. Interesting build for this one. We're starting things off. Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage in the Premier Division, the one and only Premier Division fight. And some people were complaining about this. Guys, this is a clear, let's get the party started quick with the quick finish setup fight for Bo Nickel. They're trying to get the pay-per-view started on a high note. They know Bo Nickel's likely going to run through Cody in the first round. I think this is a good decision to kick off the pay-per-view this way. We have Bo Nickel as the favorite, minus 2,300, one of the biggest favorites ever takes on Cody Brundage, plus 1,100. The one question that everyone wants to know, Ozzy, is there value on Cody Brundage's money line?
I don't think so? And I don't think so because Cody Brundage, like, physically, he's just not imposing. You know, he's just not like a kind of guy who he would ever be able to really compete with Bo physically. And then mentally, he definitely can't. You know what I mean? Like, it's like different when we got a guy like, let's say, like Bonfim fighting Nicholas Dalby, right? Where you're like, I just know Nicholas Dalby is tough and resilient. So I can understand taking a dog shot, right? That was like, what, like 4-1, 5-1, right? Something around there. I'm not sure, but I think Cody Brundage is the bomb overall in terms of just like when he is in these fights. I don't want to say he's a bomb. Like, when he is in these fights, though, like he just kind of gives up on it. Like, he kind of doesn't really fight to a plan that he is reliable to kind of keep going back to. You know, he kind of panics in there, I feel, and makes bad decisions. Anyway, I feel that Bo is going to submit him first round, Anaconda choke.
You think sub, huh?
Anaconda.
I think KO is more likely here because, you know, it's a little bit difficult, I think, to sub Cody Brundage. You know, you're going to have to, you know, get a good position, you know, fight the hands a little bit, work to sink in the choke. We saw Bo Nickel's, you know, choke game is not too refined versus Jamie Pickett. I know Ozzy was all over that one. You know, he just wasn't doing the arm triangle properly. I could maybe teach him a few things. You know, got to get your head to the mat. He was really struggling with that. So hopefully he's learned how to do some more submissions since then. But I don't see why he would fish for a sub when he could just throw a few strikes and, you know, Cody Brundage is just going to shell up and just be like, get me the fuck out of here. I mean, he has no fight in him. Like you said, this guy doesn't deal with adversity. And I just think that if Bo gets on top and throws a few strikes, that's all it's going to take. And he's going to be shelling up. The ref's going to be eager to step in. And I don't even think Bo's going to, you know, need to really settle in to even look for that sub. The answer about the value in the money line, I'm going to go with no. Bo Nickel hasn't fought out of round one. He hasn't fought anybody good. He hasn't fought or faced any remote adversity whatsoever, not even a second worth in his MMA career. So putting him as the 95-96% favorite is a little stupid, but I mean, he's probably going to finish Cody in the first round here. And Cody's win condition likely revolves around Bo tiring himself out and Cody somehow for the first time in his career surviving the early storm and coming out on top. That's just super unlikely, and you can always jump in on a live bet. This is how the fight's going to go. There's going to be a takedown attempt in the first 30 seconds. Brundage is going to jump guillotine. It's going to fail, and he's going to get TKO'd 2 minutes later. The fight's going to be over in, I would say, 2 minutes and 30 seconds at the most. So that's that. Bo Nickel, moving on to the next one. I hope he gets an actual warm body for his next opponent. We're moving on to the lightweight division. Another lightweight fight. We've got like five lightweight fights on this card. An amazing matchup here. Former champion Charles Dubronx, Oliveira, Armand Sarukian. Armand's the favorite, minus 210, coming back with Oliveira as the plus 180 dog. And, you know, this is a tough one. This is a really good matchup. And I see two different dynamics going on here where I think that the more likely fighter to finish is going to be Oliveira. The more likely fighter to win by decision is Armand Sarukian. And it's a little tough to imagine how Sarukian is going to win a decision safely, because Oliveira is such a dangerous fighter. Most finishes in UFC history. He can hurt you on the feet. He can submit you from all angles on the ground. And he is just an absolutely lethal finisher. So Sarukian's never going to be safe here. But I think that if Sarukian fights to a similar game plan as he did versus Demir Ismagulov, where he pushes him to the cage, takes him down against the cage, grinds him out, you know, with the back clinch and just keeping it to mostly wrestling and riding positions. He doesn't want to settle in Oliveira's guard. That's not safe. But if he can, you know, maybe get top half guard, or he can get to that back clinch, or just stall him out against the fence using some of that, you know, muscle of his, I think that he should be able to safely grapple.
What did you just say?
To use some of the muscle of his. Okay. You ever see this guy? Sorry, this guy.
He's going to win a decision? Like, you just gonna hold him down and win a decision?
Like, just
I don't see that shit is happening, dude. Come on.
No, I mean, no, it's hard. It's a little hard to imagine. I agree. I actually somehow Ozzy gotten into a Twitter reply where I said that Armand was on steroids and some people were trying to say that he wasn't.
Because
that was fun. I had to mute that shit right away. But people were agreeing with me. You know, I was getting a lot of likes, you know. I wasn't getting racist. Nice. Nice, very nice. Nice. Anyway, so
you said I was to get ratio.
So everyone is cheering for Charles Oliveira here, right? I mean, you got to cheer for Oliveira. I have a bet on the no scorecards for Oliveira plus 165. I also have a bet on Sarukian by decision plus 350. So ideally, it would not be a Sarukian finish. That would be a double loser. If Oliveira wins a decision, that's just a one loser, and Oliveira wins, so I'm happy. So let's hope it's not a Sarukian finish. I do think there's a slight possibility of that if he catches Oliveira with some punches, but you know, I don't understand the no scorecards being minus 200 for Sarukian against the guy with the most finishes in MMA history, UFC history.
Make him pay.
He has been finished a good amount of his own. I just don't see it here. I don't see it. I don't fucking see it. So,
do they think that Charles Oliveira is fucking Joel Alvarez, bro?
Clearly, there's some disconnect going on here. Don't forget, Sarukian took 13 minutes to finish Joaquim Silva, just like last year. So, this guy's clearly not a lethal finisher.
Yeah, so my main thing here is that Oliveira's just so dangerous, dude. When he starts throwing those knees and, you know, using the clinch and stuff like that, like, it's not a coincidence that, like, it's kind of like that clinch and the connection between that and, like, the outside, like, punching and kicking game. That's kind of what, like, won him the Gaethje fight and the Dustin fight, when him, you know, throwing those knees in the clinch and softening Dustin up. And he's just so dynamic. So, I mean, you know, I think this will be interesting. You know, Oliveira, the thing that I hate is that in both the Islam and the Benny fight, the guy pulls guard within, like, or like lets himself get taken down within like the first minute, both the fights, man. He like literally has like double underhooks and he's like trying to do like some dumbass like clinch. His clinch takedowns suck. And then he just like goes to his back. And I don't want that to happen because Armin, you know, in that joint, like, he has good top control, overall, I feel like he'll throw a lot of strikes, but I do want to see these guys grapple. But man, something about it just feels to me that Armin potentially is going to get in trouble here. So I'm measuring the line.
Hopefully. You interested in that no scorecards for Oliveira?
I am. I feel like Oliveira, once he's at, like, you notice, like, his head, his body just looks different, and I feel that he takes, like, damage a little bit better.
It's still plus 165 on DraftKings for that line. That's a confusing line to me. It really is, Ozzy. And they have Armand minus 300 to win a decision, so... Man, I think both those lines have value. You know, you're kind of threading the middle a little bit, threading the needle a little bit, but I think Armand quickly finishing Dariush is like skewing this line a little bit towards inside the distance and towards Armand ITD when that's not in fact likely. Like they have it more likely that Tsarukyan finishes Oliveira than wins by decision. That is so wrong to me.
Oliveira knockout, I'm calling it.
Oh, they have Tsarukyan ITD at plus 105. They think he's almost 50% likely to finish Charles Oliveira. Get the fuck
flying,
out of here.
Flying knee, left flying knee knockout for Charles Oliveira.
They have that at 850 on Unibet, so I agree. Probably. I mean, that's live. I'm pretty sure Joaquim Silva hurt Armand at one point and maybe even won the second round of that fight. Did that not
happen? Armand's been training with Grant Dawson, and what Grant could teach him is how to fucking get knocked out in the first round.
That is true. That is, he also could teach
what's Oliveira like round one or round one KO?
I'm not sure. I'm looking at the scorecards for Joaquim Silva fight, which I'm pretty sure Joaquim won.
Very important.
Yeah, dude. Joaquim was over one round two on all three scorecards. And your question was round one for Oliveira.
Yeah, they have that round one KO.
540, 450, some books, round one KO at 1,200, 1,600.
You said they have round one at 540?
Yeah, that's fucked, isn't it? Fucked. Well, that's on BetOnline. Let's see. Let's check a real sports book like FanDuel, not BetOnline. Because BetOnline's props are shaky. They have Oliveira round one at 600. That's no good. No good.
Yeah.
Moving on. The BMF title fight here between Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway. Justin Gaethje is the favorite here at minus 158. Max Holloway coming back plus 138. The Blessed is moving up to 155 here for his, you know, second or third time. And Justin Gaethje defending his, you know, BMF title. Kind of corny at this point. But I already said the line, and I started the last fight off. So it's your turn to give us your thoughts on this fight.
The BMF. You know, this has been a dream fight, honestly, overall. And also, like, a nightmare fight. Because being a fan of both guys, you know both guys are very tough. So you, like, wow, like, they could inflict, like, a crazy amount of damage on each other. You know, obviously, Justin has the leg kicks. He's got huge power in his hands. He's developed his jab in his later career. He's looked patient, right? And he's looked really good in his last few fights, right? Like, he kind of even used a freaking Martian right high kick in his last fight, right? Like, the motherfucker never throws head kicks. And he finishes his last fight with a pretty sick head kick. So he, to me, is clearly still improving. Max Holloway, I feel, has just been tweaking. I don't know if he's been getting better, but it's hard to read him sometimes, I feel. And I think the whole trilogy with Alex Volkanovski also has been weird. And then the fact that he's just been so durable, you're always like thinking that, can he do this? But the fact is, Justin kicks a lot harder than Alex Volkanovski. And I feel that he is a rightful favorite. Now, you know, do I think that Justin at times is a bit hittable? I do. You know, he did get a hit a good amount by Michael Chandler. and a lot of these other guys here at 155.
Fiziev.
And Fiziev, yes, exactly, as well. Fiziev. And a guy like Max, who could throw a lot of combinations, if Max is able to dictate the encounters and able to not have to navigate the leg kick as much, I think that he could put himself or put Justin in some bad situations. So where he's maybe like ripping body shots, and you know, this is a big fight for Max. You know, it's a big fight for Justin, but I do think it's a bigger fight for Max. And I'm really at the edge of my seat for it. So I have a little bit of plus 190 on Max, but not too much. But I've been considering, now that it's getting close to minus 150, to flipping and getting on Justin Gaethje.
Interesting.
What do you think about the over 3.5 in this fight also, by the way?
I think it's going over. I think it's honestly going the full five. Mm. And I am also going to be picking Justin Gaethje to win the fight. You know, you got to be fans of both these guys. They're both, you know, some of the most lovable guys in the history of the UFC, especially in terms of their fighting ability, man. I mean, these guys never had a boring fight, and it's just impossible to dislike either of these two guys as a fighter. But I do think this fight favors Justin Gaethje by a decent margin. You know, I would say 2-1 is where I would put Gaethje. So that wouldn't mean that there's value on his line, but I actually have one bet on this fight so far. It's Max ITD plus 750, because I saw that, you know, that line was way lower on BetOnline. It was 750 on DK. I took some of that, and you know, it's a small bet. I don't think it's coming home. But the number was off, so I had to take it. I think the first half of the fight, man, is going to favor Justin Gaethje. And it really comes down to the weight classes, man. The punching power in the weight classes, I think, are going to be evident here. We saw that right away in Max Holloway's last lightweight fight against Dustin Poirier. And I mean, he got rocked early on there. I mean, we just saw right away that Max Holloway's style at 145 is he's not necessarily thinking about his defense that much, because he has such a great chin and he is used to getting in so many wars at 145. That was not the case right away in the fight at 155. And I think that there's a good chance that happens here, where Justin is landing some shots early where Max is, you know, getting visibly hurt a little bit, and he's adjusting to the fact, hey, I'm not a featherweight anymore. And even his most recent fights, you know, Korean Zombie, so far past his prime. Arnold Allen, good boxer. Volkanovski, these guys are great fighters, but they don't have that same one-punch power that Justin Gaethje does. And I think we're going to see Max getting, you know, wobbled with some shots here. And even if this fight goes late, you know, the consensus opinion would be that the chances get better for Max as it goes on, and he could use some of his cardio and his output and his five-round experience to maybe take over late here. Justin Gaethje has been through some absolute wars lately. I mean, the Fiziev fight, he was getting lit up for the first half of that fight and just kept working. You know, just the fact that he was getting ripped with body kicks and lit up with punches to the head, none of it fucking mattered. His cardio in the third round of that fight was remarkable. I mean, an absolutely high-paced war in the striking against a nasty striker like Fiziev. And Justin Gaethje was fresh as a daisy in the third round. It was remarkable. And that fight really makes me think that Gaethje probably isn't going to be slowing down that much here. Training at altitude in Colorado. And I think maybe Max could take over in 4 and 5, but I don't think it's going to be enough, man. I think that we're going to be looking at a Justin Gaethje decision here. And I'm not interested in playing the goes the distance, even though I do think it goes, because it's going to be a war, man. These guys are likely going to hit each other in the head 100 times each. And this could be the first time we ever see Max Holloway get finished potentially as well. So, man, I like Gaethje here. The leg kicks, the power punching advantage. He's really impressed me in some of his recent fights, and I think he's getting the job done. He's getting his hand raised here and retaining his BMF belt. Let's put this fucking BMF belt to bed.
No, shit. No, shut your mouth.
who's next for the BMF?
You're a horrible belt? Promoter. You're a
the
horrible
Jalen Turner versus Justin Gaethje for the BMF title.
No, Volkanovski.
Fuck that, dude. He's not coming up to 155.
Why not?
He just shouldn't. He's gonna get a fucking dirt nap if he does.
Matt Frivola.
I'm very bearish on Volkanovski's rest of his career, man.
You said freaking deep throw his fucking hog, so that's a surprise.
We're profitable. We predicted a lot of his fights correctly. Moving on. Co-main event, women's strawweight division, the battle of the Chinese ladies here. Weili Zhang taking on Yan Shan'an. Odds for this one have Zhang as the huge favorite, -510. Yan coming back +385. So this line's probably accurate, man. I mean, Yan is going to be the better striker while it's on the feet, but this fight's not staying on the feet, man. Zhang's going to rip her ass down to the ground. Zhang's going to rip through her guard. If you watch the Yan Shan'an fight against Carla Esparza, I just think that there is no reason on earth to think that Yan has a chance in this fight, man. I know that Carla is a better wrestler than Weili Zhang is, but the things we saw in that fight, Yan goes down from takedowns right away. She tries to go full guard. Oh, she opens up her guard, gets her guard passed. Okay, now she's in side control. Can she escape? No. Can she mitigate risk at all? No. Oh, now she's in mounted crucifix, getting pounded with punches. Can she escape? No. This is all stuff that Zhang does. She hits takedown. She passes to side control. She goes for the mounted crucifix. I don't think that Yan has a remote chance in this fight. I think she's going to have to knock Zhang out early, or else she's just going to get ragdolled on the ground here and probably tire herself out, getting pummeled on bottom. And I think Yan is KO round one or bust. Let's check out the odds for that one. I mean, I think it would have to be 15-1 for me to even consider it, which it probably is, but I don't know, man. I have a bet on Zhang sub +550, but after watching the amount of crucifix versus Carla, I think there's a great chance that Zhang just repeats that exact position and TKOs her. What I'm hoping for is the Chinese bond between these two ladies, you know, the communism bond between the two of them. Is like Zhang's like, I'm not going to elbow her face and I'm just going to, you know, go for a nice choke. I don't know what fucking choke it's going to be, but let's see here. Oh, shit. Yan KO round one, 42-1. Sign me up. That's her path here. So I said 15-1. what are you thinking here?
Man, you had a really good time breaking that fight down, man. I'm happy for you. Yeah, I don't really have a lot of thoughts in this fight overall. I was leaning towards the over. But yeah, I really don't want to have action on it overall. I just feel that Yan, you know, she moves well in the cage, but I feel that because of that, that's going to make Weili want to take her down more. And
yeah,
her takedown defense is bad, and Weili actually shoots good double leg takedowns and stuff like that. She's actually like kind of quick and finishes takedowns, emphatically. So, I think that's going to happen.
That's it. That's all you got for the second biggest women's fight in MMA history. No, it's not actually that. But I mean, the fact that this fight is second to last fight on this monumental card doesn't make sense to me.
Yan will. But the thing is, like, Yan doesn't have power either. She sucks. I don't like.
Yeah, she does. She got a little pop, and Zhang gets hit. Yeah, ask Andrade if she has pop.
She ran Zhang off. Fucking headbutted that shit.
Dern got some pop.
Dern, she barely could hurt. Bro, how could she not have finished Dern? She was.
UFC 200, they did Aldo versus Edgar, and then they did non-title fights after. This fight should have gone after Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel gets the job done first round. Hey, everyone's happy. Okay, let's suck the energy out of the crowd with Zhang, you know, wrestling her. Okay, we got that out of our systems. Charles Oliveira fight. It would have been perfect. I don't know.
Okay, man. If it means the Chinese look bad, I'm all for it.
I'm off Chinese food. Personally, I feel every time I get Chinese food, it ends up being just like greasy and not as good as I expected. Yeah. And I don't go to the cheap, like, you know, fucking China Palace or China House. That's what there's literally a place called China House around me that, you know, you get that cheap General Tso's lo mein. No, I go to the upper scale Chinese places and it still just underwhelms me, man.
Yeah, it, funny that you say this. I had a friend who posted like an Instagram, like a story today. He's like, yeah, you know, I don't drink anymore. But the closest I feel to having a hangover is after I have Chinese food. Dude, the day after I have Chinese food.
The MSG and what's your Chinese order? I get Kung Pao chicken. What about you?
I don't know, dude. The works. You can't just stick to. You gotta that's keep a rotation.
That's true. Yeah, maybe that's my problem. All right, main event time. In the light heavyweight division, the reigning defending double, he's not the double champion currently, but the former double champion, Alex Pereira, taking on Jamal Hill, former champion of his own right, coming off of an Achilles tear. Alex Pereira is the favorite, minus 132, Jamal Hill plus 112. Before you start this one off, Ozzy, I got to give a little preface that my man Joey Coco sent me some knowledge this week that Achilles tendon tears are one of the most difficult injuries to ever recover from as an athlete. Did you know that, Ozzy?
I did know that.
I didn't know that. And he sent me some statistic that said that the NHL players who tear their Achilles, 26% of them never even play again. Not that they don't come back. They never even play again. And then the average recovery time is like a year and a half. And Jamal Hill is coming back from it 9 months later. So give us your thoughts on the fight. Give us your thoughts if you think Hill's injury is a factor here at all. And break down this monumental fight for us.
Yeah, I found that funny. You were like, not only do they never come back, they don't ever play again.
Yeah, a little bit of a double meaning.
I was like, whoa, that's fucking serious. But yeah, so you got this fight here. You know, Jamal Hill, man, I've struggled with a few of his fights overall, especially that Glover fight. I thought that Glover would be able to utilize his grappling a little bit better. But Jamal, he keeps a pretty interesting pace, throws strikes in kind of like different patterns than a lot of people. And he's a bit more well-rounded on the feet than I think a lot of people give him credit for. He utilizes his kicks very well. He throws kind of like elbows and weird hooks, and he'll use the clinch and throw knees, and you know, use jabs from both stances as well. But yeah, the injury is a huge X factor. I think, like you said, he's under 9 months returning back from there. And he is a good athlete, though, so I don't put it past him. You know, there's a guy, right? Obviously, Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles, but there was a running back, Cam Akers, who tore his Achilles one season, and then he was back in kind of like extremely short time, like under like 8 months, maybe like under, it might have been even shorter than that, but it was like one of the quickest ones. But I will tell you that he also had a relapse and ended up tearing his other Achilles. Either that year or the year after. So not all sunshines and rainbows over there. But yeah, so I'm kind of bearish on that. But overall, I feel that the striking, you know, Hill's been very durable, but I don't think he's actually been hit by a guy as hard as like Alex. But same thing for Alex. Like, I feel sometimes his defense, like he doesn't cover and like get to his guard that often, and he kind of like looks to like kind of like weave and kind of parry a little bit. But the guy has like a diverse skill set. I feel if he is able to get on the front foot, he throws good body strikes as well. His kicks are nasty, and I feel that him countering the kicks to Jamal Hill is going to be big. I've been going back and forth on the fight overall. I feel that Jamal is very confident, but man, there's something about Alex every time. Like, I had Yuri, and Yuri was winning, and I was feeling good about it. And then this guy just, you know, pulls a rabbit out of his ass so often. So I kind of want to back Jamal Hill, but if I had to make a pick, I would pick Pereira.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. You've been a big Pereira guy. You know, I don't think you should jump off the train. I'm not jumping him off the train.
I just feel that the lane juice here might be a little square.
Yeah, I'm I'm feeling good about Pereira winning the fight. I haven't made any bets on the fight so far, but probably will get around to making a bet on Pereira just because you might as well just fucking plant the flag. I think he wins the fight. I watched a lot of tape on the fight, and I do think the fight favors Alex Pereira. Now, a little bit more about this Achilles. They said, I think he got the surgery in either May or June of last year. And
no, it was like after July, dude. He tore it like during.
Well, this says, this is an article from January 10th, and it said his surgery 7 months ago. So 7 months before January, I think it is May. So
no.
And then whatever.
No, it's not. He tore it like International Fight Week. He tore it in July.
I did see somebody say that. I did see an announcement that said 9 months ago. Anyway, we're a little that's even worse though. We're a little shady on the details. But then I'm seeing this article: Hill's on the comeback and could be returning to action summer 2024. So in January, they were thinking that he might come back in summer. Now we're still 2.5 months away from summer, and he's already coming back. So you got to think. Did he rush this recovery? Did he have this opportunity? The UFC said, hey, I mean, we all know that the UFC 300 main event came together a little last minute. Did he maybe rush into this opportunity because it's the opportunity to headline UFC 300 for the belt? You got to consider it. I think that's likely. And the stance that I've always maintained on Jamahal Hill is that for all you weed smokers out there, you know, you know what dabs are, right? Taking dabs, not just a dab pen, but taking actual dabs from, you know, a dab rig. It's the most intense form of smoking weed possible. And Jamahal Hill enjoys taking dabs. And I just think that as a high level athlete, maybe taking, you know, smoking hot, you know, huge amounts of THC bong rips is probably not a good idea. So I've always been a little skeptical.
You're just hating. You're just hating because you can't do both. You're just hating.
That's true. Well, throughout my entire jiu-jitsu career, I was doing dabs, and I think looking back on it, I really limited my potential. Anyway, Jamahal Hill, I have been a little bit of a hater. I do think the guy is better than I have given him credit for, but rewatching his fights, I am skeptical about a few things, mostly the Thiago Santos fight. And in that fight, I just thought that he was very wild and untechnical in these striking exchanges. When they would brawl with one another, when they would trade with one another, I just thought that Hill was, you know, swinging wild, and he just doesn't have composure in those exchanges, while Alex Pereira really does. And I think that Hill's offense here is going to be all built around the lead hand. If you watch his striking style, you know that he is so lead hand active. He's throwing so many jabs, feeling out all these strikes. And I don't think Pereira has much to worry about with the jab. I think that he'll be primarily looking to just defend the jab, not really looking to counter much. And then he's going to be waiting for Hill to eventually commit to that left hand. And that's where you're going to see Pereira come back with his own counter combinations. And a similar thing happened in the Pereira Jiří fight, where Jiří was starting to gain a little momentum. He hit Pereira with some good punches, and then he started to gain some confidence, and we saw a longer drawn out combination from Jiří, and Pereira immediately countered him with two hard shots, rocked him, followed it up with some Travis Brown elbows, got the finish. And I think a very similar thing is going to happen here, where Hill will be all about that lead hand, and when he finally sits down on the left hand and has a more longer drawn out combination, it's going to be Pereira landing the better shots, showing the better composure and experience in those combinations, and eventually hurting and knocking out Hill here. And Hill hasn't ever been knocked out. I don't think he's really even been hurt that much, but Alex Pereira is a different kind of hitter, man. And he hasn't really looked undersized at all so far up at 205, even though he's coming down from a lower weight class. And I don't think he's going to have trouble here, man. I think the round one is going to be largely a feeling out round. It'll probably be Hill winning the first round. But I think that at any moment, Pereira is live to land that big counter shot and hurt and knock out Jamahal Hill here. And I'm going to go with a round two knockout for Alex Pereira here. think it'll come in a combination where he'll, you know, overextend himself in sloppy fashion, just like the Thiago Santos fight. The fourth round of the Thiago Santos fight, I mean, Santos is gassed out. He's hurt. He's, you know, already got hit with some hard shots and he's retreating. And then you see Hill, you know, throw these big, long, sloppy combinations and Thiago Santos counters him with two, three hard, big counter shots. And I just think that if Thiago Santos, 39 years old, gassed out in the fourth round of a fight, is still able to land in those wild exchanges, I don't see why Alex Pereira won't do that same thing early on here and put Hill out. So I'm going with Pereira by knockout in the second round.
With and confidence.
That's going to do it. With conviction. That's going to do it.
You don't like the overs. You like the unders.
Well, I haven't looked at them. Let's see. The 1.5. Close no, money under. No tempo. No tempo props for me here. I don't like it.
Mahogany, you scared of mahogany?
And then are we doing the FMK segment here, Ozzy?
I think we should clip it.
Get rid of it?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, like I said, going forward, Ozzy will be, you know, dropping in more irregularly to the podcast for some of the big cards. And you'll be stuck with me for some solo edition podcasts. But some big fights this weekend. Any other closing thoughts, Ozzy? Any Masters thoughts? I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch it.
Oh, Ray, you've been getting back into golf. You've been swinging the stick a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not going to be like a pro golf guy. I'm just going to play in my individual life.
That's cool. I would say I got Brooks Koepka. I got a few other plays, but yeah, I got a little bit of Brooks Koepka. I think I'm going to play Fitzpatrick and then a few like policeman things as well, but that I'm taking a few shots on the board. You got any plays or anyone that you're rooting for?
No, sir. No clue.
Austin Eckroat to make the cut. That's a pick that I stole from someone.
Yeah, you see, Ozzy has to do the pro golf betting because he has to live vicariously through it because he doesn't live in an area where golf courses are readily available. Me, I do, so I'm able to experience it myself. But he has to do the pro golf betting. I actually played a little today. Golf's a fun sport.
You don't want to go on the record, pick a golfer. Come on, sissy.
John Rahm. Is he in it?
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Sounds cool. Good.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoy one of the greatest UFC cards ever assembled. Hope you all win some bets. Hope we're all able to get some good information and betting angles from the podcast. Pleasure being joined by my man Ozzy. And we will see you all in 2 weeks before the next UFC card. Peace out, everyone.